I went in and bought some groceries. Back outside, I saw the car again. The men were definitely watching me. Being on edge didn't help me, and I shouldn't have let my temper get the best of me, but I guess I just snapped. I walked right up to the guys. "What the hell are you watching me for?" They didn't answer. They just looked at me, as though they were studying me, and taking mental notes. Exasperated, I cursed, spun on my heel and went back to my car. The men followed me back home. I thought about calling the police, but were these guys doing anything illegal? Besides, calling the cops wasn't how I'd find out who they really were. They'd probably planned for that and would either split at the first sign of a bubble top or, worse, already have the police in collusion. No, I thought, they have me where I want them. I would watch them, too. What were the outrageous things happening to me in the past year? This was just another oddity that I could add to the list. They'd make some sort of move soon enough. Calmed down, I took careful notice of the car. It was a white four-door sedan. It had Texas plates, but the car was unmarked in any other way. They didn't look like what I thought your prototypical government men should look like. They were crew-cut middle-aged men in dark suits, and they didn't even wear sunglasses. Both of the guys seemed 30-ish. One of the odd things, though, was that they didn't seem to take breaks. I didn't catch them eating once any of the time I checked. Toward evening, I heard a car starting. I peered out the window. Their Lincoln was just pulling away and heading down the street. In its place, though, was a white sedan, with two more different men. A change of shifts. I got little sleep that night, because I was determined to keep watch on the new car. I checked every hour or so, but all it did was sit there. I always wondered why the neighbors didn't notice and call the police. In the morning, I was dense, worn out, and agitated again. Maybe if they thought I was about to run for it, they'd do something and I'd be able to understand what was going on. I found the automatic garage opener. I opened the garage door, but I didn't go out. Sure enough, that got a response. There was a knock on the door. I guess I panicked, because instead of answering the door, I went out the garage. I didn't get in my car, I just looked around to see who was out there. The two guys from the day before stood on my front porch. As though he knew I was watching him, one of the men turned and stared straight at me. "Jim." "Yes," I found myself saying. "Look. We know what you're going through," he said in a reasonable tone. "But you have to stop talking about it. Who are you? How do you know my name?" They just whispered to each other, which got my goat. "If you're not going to identify yourself, I'm going to call the police," I threatened. The other one spoke in a low voice. "Jim. You have to stop talking about these experiences of yours, or we'll have to make it so you can't talk at all." 106, 107, "The keepers, who the hell are you?" I demanded. "And how do you know what I've been through? You want to explain what I've been through? HMM. That would be great, because I sure would like to know myself." My anger bolstered my courage, because I walked right up to them. They just stared at me. "If you don't stop talking about it, we will hurt your wife and family." "That did it, you bastard." I grabbed the guy and pushed him against the door. The guy did nothing to defend himself. The other did nothing to help his partner out. Seeing red, I snarled at the guy I was holding, "If you even so much as touch my wife or family, I'll kill you." Believe me, even though I have a good bit of Italian temper in me, I'd never behaved like this before. I was like a maniac. Shocked, I let the guy go. He just nodded to the other and they started walking back to their car. At the car, they stopped, and the guy I'd manhandled spoke. "You must stop talking to others about it," he said. Chapter 13, Graduation. Yes, I was upset. Again, though, my anger focused me. Was I foaming at the mouth? Maybe. Fuming and wanting to kick something? Perhaps. As the sight of those guys driving away lingered in my head, I tried to calm myself. Nonetheless, I was thinking clearly enough to be aware of something, something important. I was crazy mad, yes, but I wasn't crazy. The fact that these guys, government goons, alien pawns or whatever, spoke to me about what was happening to me, was an acknowledgement that something bizarre was happening to me, even when everyone I knew would not accept that what was happening to me was real. And the fact that they did this in broad daylight, in the consensus reality of cars, a suburban neighborhood and a food store, meant someone was confirming to me the reality of these abductions. In a strange way, even though these fellows fell far short of being friends, they were doing me a favor. Men in black, princes of paranoia, whatever the hell they were, they'd given me a gift. Even though I had no answer to my question, I was somehow less alone, to say the least. A couple of hours later, a couple more guys in a white sedan showed up. That was enough. I decided that I should do something. I almost liked this particular mystery. I looked up the closest address for the Federal Bureau of Investigation. I couldn't do much in the matter of my alien tormentors, but I sure could do something significant in broad daylight. I was 108, 109, the keepers going to go to the authorities, to the people sworn to protect common Joes like me. I wasn't sure what would happen, but at least I could see if they'd follow me. More than that, I'd be able to see how determined they were to keep tabs on me. So into his car goes Jim Sparks. Out goes Sparks into no man's land, determined to see just how determined this new batch of guys were. Sure enough, it didn't take long to find that white sedan in my rearview mirror. First I sped down some farm roads at 80 miles per hour, and that white sedan just kept up with me. Back to the highway went I, back to the highway went they. Onto the freeway I led them, driving like a maniac, passing and twisting and turning through the traffic, and they paced me. Miracle of miracles, I wasn't stopped by cops. Maybe I would have been eventually, but we hit a major traffic jam, the bumper-to-bumper variety. Everything indicated an accident up ahead, nothing uncommon on this freeway. As I sat there, smelling the exhaust and feeling the anger and uneasiness accumulate around me on a hot Texas highway, I thought, let's see how serious they are. Without giving any warning, I floored the gas pedal and turned onto the shoulder. With tires screeching, I kicked up lots of dirt and gravel back onto their car. I felt clammy with perspiration. The guys were still on my tail. I sped down the shoulder about half a mile and drove through a shallow ditch onto the service road that ran parallel to the freeway. I found my way out of that mess and navigated my way back toward the address I'd found for the FBI. That sedan followed me straight there. Sure enough, the place looked official enough, a government-style building, with a chain-link fence and parking lot. I pulled up in front of it, stopped and looked. They weren't behind me. They'd stopped a bit back. Okay, Jim. I asked myself, what now? I was here. Let's see what would happen. I went inside that FBI building into a standard-ish Reader's Digest and cheap furniture waiting area, smelling of floor wax. Behind a glass partition was a woman. I wasn't sure what to do, so on 110, graduation, the spur of the moment, I devised a plan. I called myself Bob Jones. I told her I was being harassed by a religious cult. She seemed to take this in stride. I don't know, maybe they get people every week who claim to be abducted by aliens and then followed by guys dressed in black, but at least they wouldn't think I was nuts if I told them this. I'd get to talk to someone. I wouldn't get brushed off with a form and a "please call this number if you see these aliens again." Politely, she asked me to sit down. She'd get me an official. Sure enough, soon a man came out, conservatively dressed, with close-cropped hair. He was obviously an authority, but a relaxed and very kind authority. I explained that I thought my wife and I were being targeted or stalked by some sort of cult members. I tried to sound reasonable and logical, and above all, sane. His response was simple. First of all, he said, with a gentle but firm tone, keeping a sincere eye contact, religious cults are perfectly legal, unless of course they break the law, in which case you would have to take that up with the local authorities. Then upon the authorities' request the FBI could take action. He was considerate, but didn't spend much time with me. I didn't get any kind of sense that he or the FBI was involved in any kind of conspiracy with me as its subject. I felt a bit deflated. I'm not sure exactly why I didn't tell him the truth and then run out and point at those guys in the car. Maybe I thought he'd just have me locked up. Or worse, if I dragged him out, the geese might be gone. I thanked him for his help, and he showed me to the door. What happened next I've shared with very few people, but I feel I should mention it here in my book. Those guys in the white sedan weren't gone. They were still parked outside the fence. I was about to point them out to the FBI man, but the direction of his gaze indicated to me that he already knew who was there. Moreover, as he spotted them he lifted his hand, and waved to them. 111, the keepers. I almost fainted. I was so scared. Was this my imagination? It certainly opened a whole can of worms. Although the FBI cars in the outside lot were different from this one, it would seem that the agencies were working together. I tried to say something, but nothing came out. I'd lost all my fighting spirit. I just let them follow me home. I was bone tired, with this and the abductions, so I just decided to let them watch me sleep for a while. I managed to sleep over 10 hours. When I woke up, I peered out the front window. The men in their sedan were gone. It would be several months before I would see any other sign of them. To this day I have never solved this piece of the puzzle. Had my visit to the FBI discouraged them? Had higher authorities pulled them off my case? Or was it all arbitrary? And, who are those men? All this happened in mid-1989. For a while things were quieter, save for strange noises and thumps and odd lights. Teresa would check on me from time to time, but I encouraged her to stay away. I tried to keep my business going, and make some money. But even so, I still was not in the best mental shape. In the last 4 months of 1989 I was abducted 4 to 6 times a month. Always I found myself in the same room, always being taught, but now I could communicate with the creatures better, clearer, and much faster. The reward sessions became more complex and interesting, and the semen extractions much more pleasurable. The visitors seemed extremely interested in sex, my sexual drive and my libido. Oddly, I started to build a sense of trust with the creatures. I saw that they didn't want to kill me, and some of my instinctual fear was dying down. Still, on a regular basis, I would request to be allowed the freedom to move around and explore. This request was always denied or ignored. I knew in my heart that it was really my fault. I still felt a lot of animosity towards them. They felt this, and they didn't trust me. During this time, I also noticed other aspects of the phenomena, and I experienced it directly. I began to understand the whole nature of the interdimensionality of these things. 112, graduation. The following experience explains exactly why it's so hard to pin these creatures down with the rules and laws of everyday reality. You'd think with the UFO reports coming down to us for 50 years, the general populace would have enough evidence by now to know if this was really happening or not. Well, the truth is that much of what happened simply doesn't fit the day-to-day, 9-to-5, car in every garage reality that we live by. There's so much interaction that's reported about the visitors that's so dream state-like and confusing, but I experienced all this in a waking state, and I remember it exactly. It's late 1989. I'm lying on my sofa at night, sometime between 3 o'clock and 4 a.m. and I'm feeling a little jittery, anticipating something. The air just has that metallic taste. The atmosphere. That creepy feel. I'd just been awakened from a deep sleep. Usually I have the overwhelming urge to go back to sleep. Then, acceleration. Whoosh. Disorientation. Lesson time with my alien buddies. This time, though, it was different. I fought that return to sleep. I wanted to be consciously aware of exactly what happened. Difficult stuff. However, as you may have concluded by now, I'm a willful bastard at times, and I clung to consciousness. The sitting position helped. I concentrated hard. The first thing I noticed was a crackling sense of static electricity all around my body. Fear jabbed me hard. My heart started thumping, and my breathing got labored, then paralysis took over. My head started to pulsate so hard it felt as though my brain were going to burst out of my eyes. Then the sights and sounds of acceleration hit me. If you don't have a heart attack, I thought, you might be able to tell someone about this, so don't have one. The living room furniture started turning transparent. My television, chairs, sofa, then the walls themselves started to fade away. I discovered that I could turn my head to the right, left, up and down. The whirling sound became so loud I almost blacked out. I could feel the soft fibers of my carpet against my bare feet. I could also feel my rear end sinking into the foam rubber sofa 113, the keeper's cushion. Slowly my feet began to feel cold as though they were dangling in the air. At the same time I could feel cold hard metal under my butt. I looked down. My feet were dangling in the air as if propped on a hospital table. Yet at the same time I could see my feet firmly planted on my living room carpet. How could this be? Then I glanced down at my lower torso. I could see and feel myself sitting on a metal table, yet at the same time I could see and feel myself still propped on my sofa. Somehow, at the same time I could feel the cushion of the sofa at the same time that I could feel cold hard steel under my rear end. Damn, I said. I'm half here, and half there. But where was there? I certainly didn't seem to be on the alien craft. All about me were my furniture, my walls, my television, lamps, and pictures of my living room, yet they were almost invisible. As I continued to stare, I could see that I was in a large facility. The walls were painted white. The ceiling was much higher than normal, perhaps 30 feet high or so, and there were no windows. I recognized fluorescent light fixtures. On the visitor's craft, the lighting seemed to spill from everywhere. Around me now were human military guards with their backs against the wall, spaced about 20 feet apart. I couldn't tell their service branch, but they looked like military police. Now, this could have been some sort of trick or screen imaging, or the interpretation my brain made of what was going on. However, the fear had left me. I could tell their magnetic field or whatever was still buzzing me, my heart thumped, electricity fuzzed all over me. My living room was completely gone now. Jim Sparks was 100% elsewhere. But where? It looked as though I'd been allowed to transfer consciously. But instead of putting me in front of their teaching tools, I was in some sort of underground facility. I say underground because it had that bunker feel, that subterranean texture. The walls looked like something humans would construct, only higher than usual, and, as I said, the lighting seemed fluorescent. From my perch on that metal table I could see that I was, graduation, figure 21, half here half there, aware during acceleration, in one of many rooms separated by dividers. The divider to my right was clear, glass or plastic. I could see activity, humans, not aliens. These humans wore white lab coats with ID tags. They were too far away for me to read their ID tags, but perhaps they were some sort of radiation detectors, because as they got closer I could see there was no writing on them at all. I also noted that they were of different colors. I tried to shout, but nothing came out, paralysis. A military officer approached the entrance to one of the lab rooms. Somehow I felt I knew him. As he stood by the entrance, the men and women in the lab coats filed out one at a time, maybe 30 of them. My head cleared of acceleration effects. A man from the group stepped forward and stood about 3 feet from me. He was of medium build, about 5'8", with dark hair and glasses. He was definitely Oriental. He held up what looked like a high school graduation cap, with a tassel and all. Congratulations. 114. 115. The keepers. I could suddenly talk again. For what? You graduated. Graduated what? I had deja vu. Big time. I somehow recognized the guy, but I didn't know how the heck I could have known him. It wasn't like any memories came along with the recognition. Nonetheless, my emotions were swinging from fear to comfort. I say comfort because somehow I felt safe with my own kind, and people I knew who wouldn't hurt me. Nonetheless, I felt anger at being kept in the dark. I know you. I blurted. I don't know why, but I know you. I was excited, and when I'm excited it's hard for me to keep things close to my chest. I looked over to the others and got the same associated feelings. I know you. I don't know why I know this, but I know. They all smiled. Then, one by one, they came up to my table and congratulated me. Not a one looked at all alien. This was bizarre, yes, but although it had a dream's bizarre logic, it sure didn't feel like a dream. When the last one was finished congratulating me, I asked again, "Congratulations for what?" No answer. They all left, save for two or three. They stood there whispering to each other, but I couldn't understand what they were saying. These people seemed as amazed as I was at the fact that I was there, as if I was some successfully conducted experiment, the results of which they were very happy with. Oddly enough, I felt a strange pride, as though I'd somehow helped them. All sorts of thoughts passed through my mind, most as usual leading to more questions than answers. Then as one of them waved goodbye, that familiar low-pitched whirling sound sprang up again, and my heart began to race. Acceleration. Heart pounding, breathing difficult, I nonetheless kept my focus. I stared at the Oriental man, who had the friendliest feel. Again, no blacking out, and the walls, rooms and lab equipment slowly faded, and my living room started FAD 116, graduationing back into place around me. Everything was the reverse of the previous experience, but holding in that half there, half here moment. This time, no fear, just fascination as I experienced the blending shift of dimensions. There was something wondrous and amazing about the experience. I guess I could compare it to a caveman's first flight on a 747 jumbo jet. They kept me in between for several minutes. I liked it. It was peaceful. Yes, this was strikingly different than the accelerations I experienced before. I was in slow motion. It felt good, euphoric, as though someone had a hand on a rheostat controlling pleasant feelings inside me. Then, after about a minute of holding this freeze in transit, the underground facility faded out and my living room came in stronger, bolder, filling out into reality. The rooms and hard hospital gurney where I'd been sitting faded totally. Slowly, the whirling sound subsided and my heartbeat slowed. I sat back on the sofa, totally exhausted. At first my muscles were wound tighter than a rubber band, then suddenly they relaxed. I looked around. Home sweet home. Funny thing though. Usually, after this sort of trip I feel disoriented and traumatized. This time I just felt exhausted. I took a few deep breaths, and got off the sofa. I paced and I thought. What did all this business mean, then? This just made it stranger. Who would believe me? I almost wish those guys in the sedan were around. I'd ask them. Look, tell you what. I won't tell this to anyone, but you have to explain to me what the hell is going on. Was that last incident an indication that I was part of some human experiment? Had some previous Jim Sparks volunteered, agreeing to have his memory taken? Or, and I was leaning toward this more heavily, was all that just an odd fabrication set up for me by my alien abductors to confuse me or to see how I would respond? But I seem to know those people. Questions, questions, and damned few answers. 117. My daughter in came the supervisor, and he froze too. A queer feeling came to my gut as the light in the room began to dim. My head and eyes seemed pulled to the left. 5 feet away was a hologram, a tall, quite steep, jagged cliff, rising up to a sharp peak. The light that projected from this hologram was intense, its clarity astounding. An intimidating figure appeared, perched on the peak of the cliff, a magnificent sight. It radiated power and shone with glory. It was a bird-like figure, but not just any bird. I recognized it from pictures, though it outstripped those pictures. It was the mythical phoenix, glorious in gold and silver plumage, with flashing blue, blue eyes. I was awed and overwhelmed. There was something terrifically spiritual about the thing that just pierced me. My pulse pounded, and I stood transfixed as this phoenix spread its large wings, almost as though ready for flight. Just at the point that the blinding light was too much to bear, and the bird thing seemed poised to fly straight at me. With a sharp implosion, the thing was gone. Normality returned. The teaching continued, the workers moved, and the supervisor left. I couldn't continue interacting with the machine. I was just emotionally drained. What the hell was that? I asked them. When they didn't reply, I got some of my angry emotions back. I yelled at them and called them mindless drones. You have no souls, I screeched. The magnificence of the thing I had seen fed the rebellion in me. The workers turned. In those almond eyes shimmered what seemed awareness. It was as though the phoenix plus my outburst had knocked them toward an attempt at examining their own existence. This made me wonder again if these workers weren't artificially constructed. Then I felt the presence of the supervisor. I turned and sure enough the boss was there. Don't say that to them. Somehow, I felt guilty for a moment, but then my outrage returned. I wrote out my question, as they'd requested to get responses. What was that bird? Chapter 14. My daughter. In late 1989 I took stock of myself, 130-something Homo sapiens of Italian descent, caught up in something he didn't understand. Feisty, but overpowered. My mirror did not lie to me, I looked rough. However, this latest experience gave me a better sense of control. And the fact that I'd stopped drinking, made me feel like there was still hope. I wasn't going to let this thing get the best of me. I started to eat regularly, exercise, and take every opportunity to sleep. Yes, the abductions continued, and yes, I was not a smiling Jim Sparks, but my physical health improved and my weight shot back up. Plus I probably smelled a heck of a lot better, too. Still, I didn't socialize. Teresa checked in on me and even stayed for periods of time, but I didn't want her at the house long. My father would call me from Florida. Hey Jim, he'd say, come and visit me and your mum. He didn't exactly buy my alien story, but he thought that getting out of Texas for a while might do me some good. Dad was convinced I was sick. I'd refuse. But something deep inside told me it might be a good idea and one of these times I might just do that. The abductions continued. I won't bore you, they got to be a routine, but around this time something else happened of note. I was there in alien zone, sitting with the teaching thing. The workers were working, and the lesson was spinning along, then everything halted. The machine went black, and the workers froze. 118. 119. My daughter. No direct answer. Nonetheless, an image formed in my mind. It was an outline memory of my classroom in elementary school. I saw myself as a child standing among my classmates, gazing at the American flag and reciting the Pledge of Allegiance. I got it. That bird symbolized whatever their society or government or alien equivalent was. They were paying some sort of respect. Why it had shown up then was hard to say, maybe it was part of my education. All of this the aliens neither confirmed or denied. But I was satisfied that this was the case. I felt a twinge of remorse. Maybe I should not have shouted such abuse at my captors. I had every right, and these angry spoutings were helping me to keep sane, but still, I had a twinge of guilt, they were showing me something of themselves. In a sense, the experience with that phoenix bridged a small gap. Recognizing and respecting the symbol of one's nation, for us, the flag, for them, the phoenix, was something we had in common. They seemed somehow a little less alien. After the phoenix experience, things were quiet and I recovered physically, if not totally emotionally. Larry the cop dropped by a few times to see if his anti-hoodoo was working. I told him it must be helping some. The other neighbors, and the other friends ignored me. As for my business, all I can say is thank God for Jim in North Carolina who took up the slack. I paid him a fair commission, but he went above the call of duty. I'm sure Jimmy thought I was on a major drug trip, or I had just lost my mind, but if it weren't for him and his wife Peggy, both excellent real estate brokers, I would have gone completely bankrupt. At this point in my life the only thing that seemed to matter to me was to survive this abduction phenomenon. Christmas of 1989 was around the corner, and Teresa was coming home to spend it with me. My relationship with her was distant at best, mostly because although there was a 3-week lull in abduction activity, the paranormal stuff continued: strange lights, noises, and things flying about the house.